Now that the American Ornithologists Union meeting is over and the Cornell Lab of Ornithology has presented the data about last year's ivory-billed woodpecker sightings leading to this year's announcement that the species is still alive, some ornithologists and armchair birders are still skeptical. And individual elements of the data really are somewhat sketchy. The only photographic evidence we have of the sightings is a single videotape lasting a few seconds. The camera just happened to catch the distant bird in the lower corner while focusing on the very near knee of a man sitting in the canoe where the camera was running. I've looked at the video many times, and though it's grainy and out of focus, I find it convincing, but some great birders do not. Then there are the recordings, none of which were made by humans hearing the birds, but by remote recording devices left in the field by Cornell. Because so many remote units were left in the area, and because they ran for thousands of hours, it's taking a long time to analyze them all. The recordings are initially analyzed by computer to identify the passages within hours of recordings that match elements of an ivory bill's calls or taps. Then people must listen to these identified passages to pull out the ones that are possibly or probably or almost definitely ivory bill calls. Although they've analyzed thousands of hours of recordings so far, they still have thousands of hours of recordings to finish. In a couple of cases, they've recorded what's called the ivory bill's Kent call, but from a distance with other birds like a very loud Carolina wren singing closer. They've also recorded what are called double knocks, a distinctive loud and quick double rap that is the standard way that woodpeckers belonging to the ivory bill's genus make a territorial drumming. What I find compelling about these recordings is that although the recording units were spaced randomly, the recordings of potential ivory bill sounds were clustered all in the same areas where sightings were made. There are obviously other ways you can get a double knock in nature, from branches bonking into each other or snapping to a gunshot. But I think the spacing between the double knocks and a few of the recordings is compelling evidence that the sounds really were made by a bird. I heard pale-billed woodpeckers make a double knock when I was in Costa Rica. The sound really is distinctive, and I honestly don't see what else could have made it in such a clear, repetitive pattern. Finally, and also very compelling to me, are the many people now who have reported seeing ivory bills with their own eyes. In at least two cases that I know of, two competent observers saw a bird at the same time and called out the identification together. Eyewitness testimony is enough to convict or acquit a human being charged with murder. Eyewitness testimony from so many credible observers should certainly be enough to cast a reasonable doubt about whether the ivory bill is extinct. Why would anyone argue against such a body of data? A few people seem to be doing it for sport. In one case, I think he'd need to be knocked on the head by an ivory bill before he'd concede it was actually there. But many sincere skeptics are very concerned that without absolute physical evidence, a shot bird or a very compelling photo or video, we're putting a lot of resources into one area when other endangered species are dwindling and disappearing. Even if one or two ivory bills are still around, some people wonder if a species with so little remaining genetic variation makes a good investment when other endangered species certainly have a better chance of surviving. I find this frustrating since, in my mind, it's a no-brainer that we should be putting the resources into helping all endangered species and developing policies to protect habitat that will make it harder for new species to become endangered in the future. I believe there are at least few ivory bills out there, and that we have an obligation to help them. If we'd start protecting the marshes and swamplands of the South, there would be a more reliant catch basin for floodwaters and less pollution from industries built in areas vulnerable to flooding. What's good for birds is almost invariably good for human beings. Production of For the Birds is made possible by support from KUMD and binoculars.com. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.